What follows is Death at the Milliner's, written by Albert P. Oakhurst, narrated by Bennett Rowe. The book opens now, Chapter 1, The Last Fitting. I found her behind the counter with a half-bent velvet band in her teeth and a look that said she'd sooner swallow it than let me speak. "Don't," Sylvia said, the band still clamped between her molars. I hung my coat on the peg behind the door. "I haven't said anything." "You were going to say the blue one's too modern for Mrs. Pargeter." I pulled the band free from her mouth with two fingers. "The blue one's too modern for Mrs. Effing Pargeter. She'll wear it once, decide it's frivolous, and bring it back weeping about her husband's opinion." "She's not bringing it back to you. She'll bring it back to me, and I'll have to unpick 3 hours of work because you were right." Sylvia smoothed her apron, though the apron didn't need smoothing. "I know you were right. That's what makes it worse." The shop bell jangled. Two women from the high street pushed through the door, all laughter and the smell of damp wool, and behind them, the afternoon light fell in a single gold plank across the display counter. Hats stood in regiments on their porcelain stands, cloches and pillboxes. A serious navy tricorn for the magistrate's wife. A ridiculous lemon-yellow number with a net veil that looked like a wasp trap. Coronation orders filled the back wall, 47 of them now, each tagged with a name and a fitting date, each one a small bet on the future of the shop. I'd taken to counting them in the dark hours. 47 meant we'd break even. 47 meant Aunt Rose's name didn't die with her. "Mrs. Vale at 4, I said, more to myself than to Sylvia. Sylvia's hands went still on the blue velvet she'd been shaping. "She's early. She's always early. It's part of the performance." I moved to the workbench and began laying out tools. Scissors, thread, a curved needle I'd sharpened that morning. The morning hat sat on its stand in the corner, half finished. A sweep of black silk that seemed to drink the light around it. No name on the ticket. No date. Honoria had ordered it 6 weeks ago, pressed 3-pound notes into my palm, and said nothing about who it was for. I'd asked once. She'd looked at me through that lorgette of hers, gold-rimmed, dangling from a chain, the kind of thing a woman wore not to see better but to make you feel seen through, and said, "You'll know soon enough, dear. Everyone will." I hadn't asked again. That was the rule with Honoria Vale. You got the information she wanted you to have and nothing more. "She's crossing the square," Sylvia said, her voice gone flat. She'd taken a position by the window, peering through the lace curtain like a soldier at a parapet. Green coat. The good gloves. She's wearing the feather hat, the one with the egret plume. That hat's 3 years old. "Yes, but she's wearing it like a threat." I wiped my hands on my apron and moved to the front of the shop. The two customers had gone quiet, drawn together like sparrows at the sight of a hawk. Mrs. Vale's approach cleared rooms. I'd seen it happen at the church fent, at the post office, at the tea room where she took her lunch every Tuesday at 12:30. Always the same table, always the same order, always watching the door. The bell rang. Honoria Vale stepped inside and the shop shrank by a third. She was not a large woman, but she occupied space like a general, her spine straight, her chin lifted, her eyes already sweeping the room and cataloging its failures. The egret plume curved above her left ear, white and extravagant, a flag of ownership. Lavender rolled off her in waves, too much of it, the cheap kind that came in a green bottle from the chemist. But she wore it like French perfume, because she could afford to be wrong about taste. "Miss Crane," she said, not a greeting but a pronouncement. "Mrs. Vale, right on time." "I am never late. It suggests I have nothing better to do." She let the lorgette rise, fixed me in its double circle of glass. "You've been busy." She meant the coronation orders. She meant the row of bright hats on the back wall, the ones with the Union Jack ribbons and the little gold crowns, the ones that said, "God save the Queen," in every stitch. "Coronation fever," I said. "Everyone wants a new hat. Everyone wants to look like they belong somewhere." She lowered the lorgette, let it swing against her chest. "I've brought the dress." She produced a folded square of cotton from her handbag. Pale gray, serviceable, the kind of fabric a woman wore when she didn't want to be noticed. I took it, spread it across the counter, and felt the weight of it. Wrong weight, wrong color, wrong everything for the hat I'd made her. "I see you're surprised," she said. "I thought you'd be wearing the burgundy." "The burgundy is for Ascot. This is for the church." She paused, letting the silence fill. "For the funeral." My fingers stopped moving over the fabric. "Which funeral?" "That's not your concern, dear. The hat must suit the dress, and the dress is gray, and the hat you've..."